We're starting.
Hello, it's Andrea Nakayama, and I had so much fun talking to one of my lead nutritionists, Megan Liebman, last week that I decided to invite my other lead nutritionist, Andy Jones, to talk to us about some of the thyroid issues that concern her during her pregnancy. Andy is, like I said, one of my lead nutritionists at Replenish, and just a brilliant clinician, really great to have on my team. I don't know what I'm going to do without her during my maternity leave. Can you believe that both my lead nutritionists are having babies within a week of each other? But I'm excited to expand the Replenish family. And Andy, I'm so excited to have this time with you this morning.
Thank you, Andrea. It's so wonderful to be here with you and to get to talk about pregnancy and thyroid. And I know that it's something that I've learned a lot about from you over the time of us working together. So I feel really blessed to have the knowledge that I have going into pregnancy about how I can better be, you know, thinking about my risk for hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Andy. I first want to preface that we're talking a lot about pregnancy right now. So we're coming out of the Hashimoto's Institute. We are in the process of looking at Replenish, how we help people to take all the information that they learned and bring it into their own body so that it becomes more about their knowledge and their wisdom, their inner wisdom, so that they know what their next steps are. And one of the things we talked about last week when I shared the conversation with Megan is how pregnancy can be a trigger for thyroid issues, particularly autoimmune thyroid issues, as well as many other autoimmune conditions. But what happens when it comes to backing it up and thinking about where we are predisposed to thyroid issues? I know this comes in with your story. So these are what we call our antecedents or our genetic factors. What's true for you there in terms of your history with thyroid issues?
Well, I think that, you know, the idea of hypothyroidism and even the word Hashimoto's is something I was familiar with from a really young age, probably, you know, from the time I was about 10 years old and beyond, because I knew that a number of my family members had that diagnosis. And as far as I know, in terms of the family history, on my mother's side of the family, all of her sisters and her mother were diagnosed as either hypothyroid or now the ones that my grandmother has passed away, and so she was never diagnosed with Hashimoto's. I wonder about that. But my aunts and my mother have all been diagnosed with Hashimoto's. And some are more symptomatic than others, but it's always a concept that I was really familiar with. And even as I, you know, was a teenager and started becoming more interested in health, I was really drawn to reading and learning about hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's because I knew that I had that strong family history. And in the more recent years, one of my sisters has also been diagnosed with Hashimoto's, and I've made an interesting correlation in that all of the women who have been diagnosed actually have had children, and they were all diagnosed after they had children. And I don't know if that was just a coincidence that they happened to be diagnosed later, but it's just an interesting correlation that I've noticed. And then just bringing further attention to that, my husband was actually diagnosed with Hashimoto's last year, and his mother and sister have both had Hashimoto's and were diagnosed years and years ago. So just it's a very prevalent condition on both sides of our family and something that I'm thinking about for myself and then also for our children.
So important that you're looking back and seeing all the family history and how that might play into your risk factors, and also just seeing in your family that pregnancy was one of those tipping points. There are many physiological factors that promote autoimmune thyroid issues like gluten intolerance and polymorphisms and heavy metal toxicity, pregnancy, GI infections, insulin surges. But one of the ones that I think is really important for us to point out here are spikes in estrogen. And I know that I saw a lot of questions behind the scenes at the Hashimoto's Institute about menopause, and people were asking, you know, we're not addressing menopause enough. And, you know, from our perspective as producers, we thought we had addressed estrogen dominance, toxicity levels, changes in hormones as key factors. And we did talk about pregnancy, both with Dana Trentini and with Jessica Drummond. But the commonality there is that there's a shift in the hormones, particularly what can be considered a spike in estrogen. And during pregnancy, you have a real spike in estrogen. And during perimenopause and menopause, we have a dip in estrogen, but it's a relative spike compared to our progesterone. So I just want to point that out. And you and I were talking beforehand about how these are the two times that hormones are changing the most drastically, pregnancy and perimenopause. But my big question for you, and what you're welcome to comment on that, Andy, is what you did to prepare for pregnancy, knowing it's like a train leading to a crash in some way. How are you preventing that crash, and what did you do to prepare?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, to go back to what you were saying, it really is incredible how both of these periods, you know, pregnancy, which we're talking a lot about at Replenish because Megan and I are both approaching our due dates and both pregnant, and menopause, there's such drastic hormonal shifts that happen for women. And I think knowing that there was a potential, you know, concern about having a thyroid condition or thyroiditis develop, you know, as a result or after pregnancy, I have gone into this experience just being aware of that and wanting to manage my risk as much as possible. So in the preparation phase, I should also mention that throughout my life, I have a lot of the symptoms that I have dealt with are more typical of hypothyroidism. And so knowing that and the family history, I have made it a point to be to have a full thyroid panel run regularly, and to be monitoring, you know, my TSH and my thyroid hormones and my antibodies. And I do present with a very low level of TPO antibodies. So they are there, but it's been, you know, very low in the reference range, maybe, you know, 5 or 7. So that's something I've just been keeping an eye on, and I plan to do that after pregnancy as well to see if there's any shift there. But you know, in addition to that, just in the preparation phase, there's a number of things that I had done even before we were, you know, in the conception phase that I think have really helped to manage my risk. And a couple of those things were just really getting clear about what was at the root of the symptoms and the conditions that I've experienced in my life. And in doing so, I really addressed my adrenals, found out that I had adrenal fatigue, and that's something that I had been working on and still work on to really support my adrenal health. I also had really been working on gut dysbiosis and gut infections and wanting to really, you know, address my digestive health as much as possible. So those are things that I had been working on that, you know, have really continued even into pregnancy, and I think are key foundations for me in managing my health and my risk for hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's. And then beyond that, you know, it's interesting now I look at this and think of it as a blessing, but my husband and I had an experience that it took us over a year to conceive. And in that process, we had had some early miscarriages, and that had triggered us to do some additional testing and really explore, you know, what was happening that might have been contributing to that. And while that was a tough experience to go through at the time, I look back at that and think that I'm very fortunate that I had the opportunity to dig in a little bit deeper and understand what might have been at the root of those fertility challenges. And some of those things are things that I think also have then allowed me to address risk factors for what could potentially develop at some point into a thyroid condition because of the family history. So things like nutrient deficiencies, really reducing and managing inflammation and bringing even more intention to that.
I love some of the – thank you, first of all, Andy, for sharing that part of your story with everyone here. I think I know it was a vulnerable time for you, and it's pretty amazing when we can turn those difficult times into opportunities, and you really did. And there's two phrases that you use that I want to point out, and one of them is that you use that time to look for the root causes. So instead of just being caught up, and it's really not a just, but instead of being in the place of not being able to conceive when that's what you wanted more than anything, you decided to do the necessary digging and see what might be contributing to this situation. And the other term that you used or phrase was manage the risk. And isn't that just an important place we all need to be in all the time with the factors that you mentioned, looking at, you know, testing and seeing where are the risk factors and eating an anti-inflammatory diet and looking at nutrient deficiencies. I want to talk about some of those nutrient deficiencies that came up for you, but first let's just get practical. What does it mean for you to eat an anti-inflammatory diet? Because even at Replenish, that's slightly different for all of our nutritionists.
It is. We all have very different paths with that. And I think, you know, this is one of the ways that I manage the risk. And in some ways, I don't think it matters whether there's a diagnosis or not, because, you know, it's at some point that's just a sign in the road where we've gone past a certain point where, you know, we're meeting certain criteria to receive a diagnosis. And
right,
what's really important.
Point.
Exactly. And I think what's really important to me is to understand how I can, you know, stay in my most optimal health. Or create a level of optimal health, even if that diagnosis hasn't come, knowing what those risk factors might be through, you know, like you said, looking at antecedents and things like that. And so in terms of the anti-inflammatory diet, you know, this is something that even prior to pregnancy, I've done a lot of work with elimination diets and just really tuning in and, you know, using some trial and error with different foods and different types of foods, and also, you know, doing food sensitivity testing so that I can see, you know, what foods my body may be creating antibodies towards. And through all of that, I had, you know, dialed in my diet to a certain extent. I have to say that in pregnancy, it's changed a little bit, partially because my experience of how different foods are feeling in my body has shifted. And also, I've just, you know, been listening into what my body's been needing and wanting, and that's been a little bit different than prior to pregnancy as well. So I've definitely been avoiding, you know, the big inflammatory foods that I know that I have reactivity to and that I don't feel well when I'm eating. So sugar has been out, you know, all refined sugars, and gluten is something that I also avoid. Prior to pregnancy, I had been completely dairy-free, and I have brought in dairy a little bit more during pregnancy. Lately, my favorite lunch has been an arugula salad with roasted beets and some raw goat cheese and pistachios. Mm-hmm. So good. So that's been my latest pregnancy craving. But interestingly, I've been doing really well with dairy. In the past have, you know, noticed some digestive symptoms and things come up with dairy, and that's why I've steered clear of it. But I've been craving it a bit more, and I've been feeling pretty good eating it every now and then. So those are the biggies that I have been, you know, steering clear of. I have been eating a little bit more of seed grains and also a little bit more fruit during pregnancy than I had previously. Not a lot, but just, you know, I find that that's coming in a little bit more as well. And then lots of anti-inflammatory foods like cold water fish. I've been trying to, especially during this last trimester, emphasize bringing in salmon and halibut and cod have been kind of my go-tos that I've been bringing in for fish. Sardines as well, something that I've been bringing in. And trying to do a lot of turmeric and dark leafy greens and just really boosting the anti-inflammatory foods in my rotation, which thankfully I haven't had a lot of aversions to anything. So I've had a lot of variety in my diet.
That's fantastic and really good to listen in and understand, like I know you do through trial and error, where a craving for something is born from maybe a nutrient need versus some other factors that sometimes have us craving things like sugar or dairy that may not be feeding us, but really good because to tune into that because your baby has certain needs right now also, and just looking at then when that and how that might shift on the other side.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I've become, and I feel thankful for this because I remember a time in my life when I couldn't really trust that, you know, like using that word craving, I couldn't really trust whether if my body wanted something, why that might be. And now I really feel clear about knowing, okay, this is something that, you know, maybe there's a nutrient need that I'm drawn to a certain food for versus I can really distinguish whether it's that versus another craving that might not be leading me down the right path from a health perspective.
And that distinction is the wisdom that we're moving towards. So, you know, what I see a lot is that, especially, you know, as many people as we had in the Hashimoto's Institute, is that there's a desire among us, an understandable desire to have one person outside of us know all the answers that are right for us and just be able to tell us. Tell me already. And, you know, what we teach at Replenish and what you're speaking to is that there is that information and then it is unique to you and being able to clear the clutter and tune into that information is really our ultimate goal. And I want to just ask you about some of the unique pieces with you in relation to nutrient deficiencies. So, you know, my last question for you is what you found there, because I know we think about, again, nutrient deficiencies as a one-size-fits-all, when in fact those particular deficiencies are particular to each one of us. So what is it that you found in that research that you did while trying to get pregnant?
Well, one of the biggies that that came up that's very unique to me and my husband was we had done some genetic testing, and interestingly, our doctor had left off of the genetic testing one of the components that was supposed to be included, and that was testing for an MTHFR polymorphism, which is a methylation variation that is a genetic variation or a SNP is what we often refer to it as. And because I've worked with a lot of our clients that have this variation, I knew I was very familiar with it and knew how important it would be for me to be tested for this going into pregnancy because this methylation variation has to do with how your body processes certain B vitamins such as folate, which we know is an important nutrient for pregnancy and also for fertility. So it was interesting to me that my doctor said, okay, well, we're going to not test that. So I had called him up and had a conversation about why I thought it was important, and he agreed to test us for that. And sure enough, found out that both my husband and I were positive for, you know, the methylation SNP. We both have different genetic variations of it, but as a result of that, it was likely affecting our status of B vitamins and our ability to metabolize hormones as well. This methylation pathway is involved in a lot more than just the status of these B vitamins. So that was something that we were able to determine and then also be tested to see what our status of those nutrients was, and both had deficiencies there. And so that was something that we were able to bring in some supplementation for and look at what we were doing dietarily to really boost our folate and B12 and also, you know, some of the other cofactors there, so that we were, you know, it had a better nutrient status with those nutrients that are really important for fertility and for conception and for pregnancy. So this is one of those things that I think is a blessing that I'm glad I had the opportunity to dig into and uncover prior to becoming pregnant. And for all we know, it could be one of the main factors that was preventing us from conceiving.
And now you have more confidence as a mama-to-be that you're not passing these nutrient deficiencies on to your baby, that you're actually supporting your body so that your baby that's growing can also come into the world not deficient there.
Absolutely.
And then go through life and see what happens with their nutrient deficiencies, but at least you're giving them the best starting field possible.
Yes, and that feels really good to know that, you know, we've uncovered this, you know, in the preconception phase and we're able to address it before becoming pregnant and during the pregnancy. So it's really a blessing to have uncovered this and be able to do something about it.
Well, it's definitely a huge success story in terms of struggling with conception and then getting pregnant. You're about to have your baby. That baby is cooked, ready to go.
It is. It's coming up on that due date. And, you know, it's I have had a really wonderful pregnancy as well, and I think that addressing some of these things prior to becoming pregnant just set me up for, you know, being in the best health that I could be going into the pregnancy. And I really feel thankful about that because I've had a really positive experience the whole time. So in some ways I'm a little sad that that part will be coming to an end, but of course I am so excited about becoming a mother and meeting our son and being able to hold him and, you know, move into that next phase together. Seems unbelievable.
Oh, you're bringing tears to my eyes. I know. I'm so excited for you, Andy, and we will look forward to talking about how you manage your thyroid on the other side. But in the meantime, enjoy these last weeks of pregnancy, and we will share pictures of your new baby with everybody.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thanks, Andy.